Hello? Are you Cal? Hope not. Cal is somebody who follows other people around. It does what other people do simply because other people do it. Who want to be part of a crowd. Who feel like that's really the only thing there is to do. This is Jay Nimro. I'm Jay Nimro, and you're listening to Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith. And this is yet another long string of MP3 files that I do while I'm traveling on the road with my work. We were just finally getting through with a lot of the preliminary action work of my great novel. It's kind of a big sucker. It's called Godsend. I'm always brokenhearted. Every time I rename my work something, at first it was called Queensryche, and, you know, all of a sudden something kind of unsavory and nasty, there's actually a rock group called itself Queensryche. I didn't like it, so I changed the name of the book to Godsend, which is, I think is actually more appropriate. And then all of a sudden there comes out this horrible, disgusting movie called Godsend. And so I was tempted to change the name again. My wife suggested it, but I said, no, you know what, I'm not going to do that. We're going to stick with the darn title that I like. So it still continues to be Godsend, even though Godsend might, to many people, have kind of a bad connotation to it. But we're not going to let that stop us. Like I said, we've gone through all the preliminary work, all the things getting up to. Now we're getting to the actual thrust of the story. We've kind of set up this whole situation of these people that have come out of this culture of enslavement and control. And they've set up this new life and the struggles they have trying to rectify the fact that they have all these leanings, all these desires for that old culture. They have a son that doesn't have those same things. He only has love for his parents and the knowledge he has from a book that his family has in its possession. Well, this is what happens. The father's name's Davor. He's a visionary man. He's always had visions. He always tends to know. He can see things going, and he's seen things happening all the time. It comes and goes. He has no control over it. He sees usually things that are happening right then, or things that will shortly happen in the future. He's seen things in the past, too. But we don't get much of that. It just happens to be there. He sees a lot of things. In a formal term, he is a seer. Anyway, he has this great vision where he sees the entire expanse of life. He sees the thing from beginning to end of his society. He sees his culture rise up. He sees his first parents, Eladius and Cassandra. He sees them. He sees the progression of the rise and fall of the kingdom of the Allad. And then finally the rise and the enslavement of the people to the convocation, which is the conglomeration of ruling women. So, those are all the things that we see. He has the whole thing. He doesn't just see up until his present day. He sees beyond it. He sees a wonderful time that's soon to come where there's going to be a deliverer, and he sees her. It's a she. It's a woman. And he doesn't see her clearly at all. It kind of becomes kind of hazy during this time because I guess during his own period of this stuff, God doesn't want him to know all everything. He doesn't want him to be able to see faces and things and know about relationships particularly. But he knows there's going to be a deliverer coming that will actually break the back of the convocation and will actually help the people come much closer to God, which they have almost ignored ever since the convocation. That's one of the things that the convocation got rid of, was God. The whole concept of God. The fact that God's important. He needs to do what he sent. It's all about these ruling ladies and getting their favor. Anyway. So, there's going to be this magical kind of golden age. It'll be the best age that Eladia has ever had. And it's something that just excites the heck out of her. Anyway, the vision finally kind of fades after that. This golden age passes, as every golden age tends to, because of our nature as people. And something very much like the convocation re-emerges. The people are ultimately enslaved, and not very far past that. Everything falls apart, and the land is just, and the land is invaded, and the people of Eladia just simply cease to exist. So this great vision is shown to Baevor. And of course he shares it with his family. And he's the most exciting part, of course, is that shortly coming this deliverer, this woman who's going to change everything. Now, Baevor knows enough to know that it's not Melisandre. Darn it, wish it was. He's going to know her when he sees her. God's going to help him know these things when it comes down to it, because he's going to be able to see things. Of course, you know, that's just the way a seer is. God's going to make it happen. So we've built up a little bit this whole seer thing. It's not a big thing, but it's a very, very real thing in the lives of his family that father can do this thing. He typically gives it so he can get the fish he needs for his family. So he's kind of grown dependent upon this. He's grown to rely on it, to trust it, and that's what God wants. God wants him to trust the things that he sees. It's going to be difficult, though, because some of the things he sees he's not going to like, and he's not going to very much want to do. Anyway, he sees this vision, this huge vision. He doesn't see it just once, he sees it several times in succession, to the point to where he sees it when he goes to bed at night, to the point to where he sees it often enough that he's not getting enough sleep, and it's starting to affect him. He can't go out and fish very well. He's having to stay at home and sleep it off. Every time he tries to sleep, he just sees the vision again. And it's making him ill. Interspersed with this big vision of everything that happened, he's ultimately going to write all this stuff down. He's ultimately going to add it to the book. At least that's what God ultimately tells him to do, is to add it to this book that his family has. It will become part of the religious record of the Allied. Even though nobody has really read the religious book ever since it was actually written, it's going to become something common once its deliverer comes. Interspersed within this big vision is a shorter one. It's very clear, it's very crisp. And it shows Baevor's family going to the palace of the queen. And revealing all this, what happens next in this shorter vision to the queen. He actually sees himself doing it. And he gives a report of this treachery against the queen that's going on among her and her high ladies. And, and he keeps having these visions in succession, swapping out back and forth, over and over again over the course of, you know, 5 or 6 days. The point to where he can hardly function. And it's finally decided that God impresses on his mind that this is going to happen, this has to happen. And God's almost kind of forcing him with these visions to go and do it. He says, I won't give you any peace until this is done. So it happens. Melisenda takes her good dresses, all of her nice stuff, and she goes, picks up her family, and she goes to back to first home, back to the island, back to Queensport, which is the Queen's city, and to the Queen's palace. Now they have to be very careful. You have to understand, Westland at this point is 15 years old. And he's a pretty typical male teenager. He's been working hard. He's a hard worker. He's much harder worker than his father ever was. But his father's gotten to the point to where he's working pretty hard just because his son's a good example. And this is kind of hard for Westland because when he goes there, there's all these beautiful women dressed gorgeous, you know, all these ladies, and I'm sorry, he's pretty hot and heavy, but he hasn't been trained this culture at all how to control himself. Mother never felt the need, because there was no women to teach him how to conduct himself again, so he's almost embarrassing. No, he is embarrassing. He's almost dangerous. And they try to help Westland at least look proper. It's really easy for Davor to fall back into walking 2 steps behind his lady, carrying all of her stuff for her, you know, back into the whole servant role, consort role that he originally started in. It's difficult for Westland because he's having to be an actor. Because he doesn't have any of these things. It's kind of weird for him, but he does his best. You have to understand, this is a household, so Westland simply falls into the thing of being into the role of being one of Melisenda's serving boys. So they go, and they do exactly what it is. Melisenda makes the first pronouncement. She talks about the fact that her consort is a seer. He can see things in the future. And of course he's questioned, he's tested, and then he presents what he's supposed to present. All according to the vision, exactly as it did, is exactly how it went. As it always does. He knows this. The conspiracy against the queen is revealed. And of course the queen sees Davor as this wonderful commodity, as this wonderful thing, and in an effort to have some more control over Davor, she brings Melisenda into her kind of inner circle of really high ladies. And you know what? Man, Melisenda is back. She's never in the group in the first place. She was never a lady. But let me tell you, this is a different queen. This is actually the daughter of the old queen who she stole so much from at her investiture. 15 years have passed. That queen has died, and now we have her daughter Yvette, who's now the queen. And she doesn't remember the Melisenda incident. You know, there's some rumors about this stuff, but she doesn't care, because this is a wonderful thing to have. And having Davor around doing seer work, of course, is all in the hands of God. It's really getting to the point to where the queen's going to rely on him for what she needs. This all happens over time. There's a whole bunch of incidents where he finds out things. And Melisenda stays to this inner circle. And sees all this stuff. She sees that Davor is a little bit different. But he has this incredible loyalty to Melisenda. She tried on a couple of occasions to get Melisenda to just give her Davor, but she's resisted strongly, you know, in such a way as a lesser lady has, to keep these things from happening, reminding her that Davor might not be very beholden to Melisenda. Well, he has to understand that within this circle is Melisenda's sister, Corin. She has, over the course of the 16, 17 years that Melisenda's been away, she has risen up by normal channels into the new queen's trust. Everything is wonderful. Everything is great. Corinne is on top of her game. And she is a heck of a woman. But she's still grasping. She still wants some more power. Although she's in this inner circle, she's not one of the high ones. You know, within this inner circle, there's still a lot of scrambling. There is a woman within this inner circle, we haven't named her yet, I don't know what her name is going to be, who wants to be queen, and is not a descendant of a past queen particularly. She's a daughter of Sarah Dio, which means that technically she could be queen. It's not a big problem. But it just would have, there would have to be a break in the matrilinear line to give her to be the queen. And she has to gain a lot of power to do that. Melisenda kind of upsets this kind of tense balance between the queen having just a little bit more power than this other woman, and everybody just kind of keeping it all under the surface, and still, you know, having your little cat smile. Everybody's just so happy to be here. These are all the most powerful women. All of a sudden, Melisenda comes in, and all of a sudden this balance is upset. Melisenda is an interesting figure, although she tends to do what the queen asked of her. You can't really call her loyal to the queen. She's had her loyalty tested a few times, and she's not particularly loyal to her. This is troublesome to the queen. The queen wants to keep her close because she needs Davor behind her. And Davor desires to try to snake Devor out from under Melisandre, and Devor isn't coming either. And it's obvious that he's not going to perform for the queen like the queen would desire unless Melisandre's there. And this has all kind of been decided. And it gets talked about how they're going to do this, because they're taking some terrible risks in doing this. But it seems like God wants them to do this. Well, in the midst of all this stuff, in the midst of all this intrigue, in comes Ennis, the person from Waykeep. He has come down because God has told him to come down and start preaching among the Alas. And he's had kind of a rough road to hoe. He came with his wife, and his wife has had some troubles. You know, she had some scrapes with the convocation. She's not a convocation girl. You know, she wasn't brought up in this kind of a society. But anyway, so all of a sudden they run into each other. Ennis has gotten to the point to where he's become for lack of a better term, gladiator. You know, he's up there, up in the high country. All he is a warrior. Well, not all he is, but the biggest part of his job is to be a warrior, to be a captain over the defenders of the pass. And so he's one heck of a warrior. He's just kick-butt type of guy. Righteous. Great guy. But, oh, man, you don't want to cross him. And he's gotten to the point to where he is top dog. He's not well-liked at all. There's only a few people that really like him. But he's been also preaching the gospel. He's been having a little bit of success here and there, but not much at all. It's mostly been among the lower classes, and it's not going very well. Most of the people, even the lower level people, they are not going to buck the system with the convocation. Anyway, so they finally meet, and Melisandre and Devor have Ennis and his wife's name is Tesrine come and stay with them, and Ennis can all of a sudden start preaching to ladies, which he has never really been able to do before, through Melisandre. Melisandre brings these women together. There's, you know, everybody who has high callings, the first thing they do is they have a good number of women underneath them. So these women who are underneath Melisandre, she has an instant in. She calls them in, and she says, you're going to listen to this guy, and we're going to get together, and we're going to try to help convert you back to God. Well, it's causing more tension among the inner circle. It's just making reverberations, problems within the convocation. It's really starting to do things. The queen is getting really upset, starting to join forces even with her enemy and the other people, although the enemy and the other people are only keeping up this kind of tenuous alliance with the queen long enough to see if there's going to be a place where they can, yeah, where they can do something to her, where they can find some advantage over her and destroy her. Anyway, all these things start happening. You have to let's go back for a minute to Wesslyn, his troubles. We've already gone over. God, this isn't going to sound a floppy. I'm sorry. This is Jane Emerald, quasi-indefatigable gentleman. We'll come back in just a little bit with a little bit more stuff. If you want more information, go to quix.us on the internet, Q-U-I-X. I'm Jay Nemro. We'll be back again. Bye.